Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news from the WordPress community. Now, welcome your hosts, David Wormsley and Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 377, entitled NoScript Show Episode 11, What's New in Web Images? Are They Worth a Thousand Words? It was published on Thursday the 20th of June, 2024. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and a few bits of housekeeping just before we begin. Firstly, I had an absolutely fantastic time at WordCamp Europe, which was held in Torino last week. It was really nice to catch up with many of you, meet some new people as well. And if I failed to meet you, well, maybe we can try again next time. We have, of course, WordCamp Europe each year, but I'll also be going to WordCamp US in Portland later on in the year as well. What a fabulous event. Thank you to everybody who was involved, especially all of the wonderful volunteers who made that event possible. The other thing to mention is that if you'd like to advertise on the WP Builds podcast and get your product or service out in front of a large WordPress-specific audience, head to wpbuilds.com/advertise to find out more. A bit like these two fine companies did. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with The Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place. Invoice clients and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more by going to go.me/WPBuilds. Once more, go.me/WPBuilds. And we're also sponsored by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. That's bluehost.com/cloud. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro and Bluehost for their ongoing support of the WP Builds podcast. Okay, I'm just going to tell you about a couple of shows that we've got coming up. Firstly, if you don't know, we have a This Week in WordPress. It's a live news show. It happens every Monday at 2 p.m. UK time. As with all our live shows, you can head to wpbuilds.com/live at the appointed time and join us. We would love to have your comments. And if you're listening to this and you fancy being a guest, hit me up on the socials or on email, admin@, and you can work out the rest. And I'd love to get some new blood into that show, as well as continue with some familiar faces. The other thing to say is, this is the Thursday podcast. If you like it, please do go and share it with your friends, relations, colleagues, enemies, whatever you like. Go onto your social channels and use @WPBuilds wherever you think it is appropriate. Okay, what have we got for you today? Well, it's one of the final episodes that we're doing of the No Script Show. When I say final, I mean it's one of the final ones that we're going to hijack into the WP Builds feed. This one is all about web images. Now, if you're used to using images on the web, well, you kind of have been constrained by the different things that you could do with them. But new CSS is coming along. Object fit, aspect ratio, border image, filter, clip path, mask image, backdrop filter, and so much more. And so David Wormsley and I chat all about that and what might it make possible for you and your websites. So here it comes, and I hope that you enjoy it. Welcome to the NoScript web show about modern web design, where we look at what we can build today with minimal software and skills. Today we're talking about web images. We'll cover technological changes such as new optimized formats and CSS properties. And we'll talk about the challenges of creating a fast and eco-friendly experience, whilst also trying to make visually attractive designs for devices that range from wristwatches to 8K TV screens. David, you've been looking at images recently. How's it been going?
Such a wonderful handover. Yeah, so, well, our chats before on user preferences and also before that on designing the show's website has got me into recently looking at dark and light images. And this is just like a whole new level of complexity onto what, for some time, I'll say that I feel like images have been something quite difficult to deal with. They are something not designed in the web in the first place, and they don't kind of fit in. And I've become more and more aware. But even though there's some great stuff, which we'll talk about when we bring up the show notes, that help us to make the experience of images on the web much better, I can't help but feeling all the time that we're always one behind on what the demands are, particularly with the devices, as you mentioned, you know, being so small and so large, and now with our concentration on speed, that we're always behind on the challenge. But anyway, shall we bring up the show notes so we can just run through?
Can I just say a couple of things just prior to that? But also, we're not just behind. I mean, it's an impossible task, really, if you think about it, to go from something literally the size of your wristwatch and to be optimized for that, to then something which could occupy, goodness, like a 12-foot screen and still look good. That's a real challenge. And you know, I'm used to just putting the IMG, the image tag in, and then sourcing it and picking a JPEG or something like that. But things have moved on. And there's a whole load of things coming up, which will make all of this a little bit more likely. So I'm going to put up the screen. So if you're listening to this or you're watching it, you can find this at our URL, our website, and it's noscript.show/11, because it's episode 11. So noscript.show/11 if you want to follow on. Right, over to you, David.
Well, we've broken it up into little sections, so we can just talk about some of the new CSS that come in that helps us with stuff. So I think probably I'm stretching it out on the things that we've got on our show notes here, but we've got object fit, which is, I think, wonderful, because it's something that will allow an image to resize to its container. And one of the coolest things I think about that is with the object fit cover, because what that does is it keeps the dimensions of your image the same. So for example, if you've got it in a container and it's kind of wide on the desktop, and say it's a picture of you in the middle of a field or something surrounded both sides, so you're in the center of it, as you squeeze in, you can have the photo kind of crop itself. So it's just you in the middle. So you can use that one picture without having to bring in another picture for different kind of devices.
Yeah.
So the subject matter will still look good. So I think that's a pretty cool thing that we've got for dealing with responsive web. We've also, again, aspect ratio, which you used to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And we've needed it on the site because we've got those YouTube thumbnails for the videos. And in fact, the thing that we're serving them up through has the old hack on it. I've changed it to this new CSS where you needed to use calc or something on a border or margin bottom or something to make it keep its dimensions, which is 16 over 9, I think, on YouTube. So that's great. So we can keep our aspect ratio as things slim down responsively. And I think that's good. But there are a few other things that have come in, which are quite new, which I don't think gets talked about much. There's border image, which allows you to put basically an image in your borders rather than just round off your borders and that, which is pretty good. But there's a great Smashing Magazine article which covers all the wonderful things you could do with it. So you kind of do it to, you can, one of the examples there, which I think is very useful, is that you could use it to kind of put a gradient over the whole image without having to kind of bring something else in on top of that, which I think is quite nice. So we got filter as well, which we were discussing yesterday, weren't we, about filters. And this is, it's something where we've got various functions that we can apply to our image. We've got blur, brightness, contrast, drop shadow, hue, rotate, invert, grayscale, saturate, sepia, and opacity. So lots of different ways that we can kind of change our images, which has been quite interesting for the light and dark modes, because you could, for example, if when you go to a dark mode, maybe the contrast of your images against the background is too sharp, so you could use something like a filter to just take that down a little bit across the board and swap those out. But it's quite an interesting one. That there was a little caveat I kind of discovered with that, is that if you've got lots of these, you can use them, the multiples of these things, to create some really wonderful effects. And there's some generators that help you pick color in for those. But I noticed on Firefox that it doesn't quite render in the same way that it does on Chrome. So
yeah, we looked at the MDN resources, didn't we? And we discovered that they stack in the order like a cascade in CSS. If you put brightness first, that's going to be the one that gets done first.
Yes, yes.
And if you put drop shadow second, and they, you know, if there's some sort of collision between those two, then the one that is lower in the stack is going to be the one that gets, you know, rendered later. So you could probably have quite a lot of fun with that, actually.
Some of the generators are great at picking a color, but it assumes that you start with a black. So if you say you wanted to use filter on your logos to do dark and light or some other effect with that, you'd be best trying to emulate the color you wanted it to change to by starting with a black SVG, for example, or didn't matter, transparent image would work. That's great, but then this becomes a bit of an issue if you're using that, because this is just in the CSS. So if it's important to you that search engines pick up on the image that you have, it's not going to be the same as what your people on their website are going to see. So I think there are, you know, reasons to sort of, you know, treat that with caution. I think buying it via images, if it's important, what is indexed is a true representation. So we've got clip path, which is replace clip, which just allows us to kind of clip out certain images to shapes, which I think is pretty cool. We've got mask image, which, it's hard to explain, but the best example I saw is actually linked there. It's on WP Schools, where it's got a wonderful where you're putting an image over the top of another image. So it's transparent. So in this case, it's putting text, which are cut through, and then you've got the image underneath that text. So. Lots of great effects you can do with that. And then we've got backdrop filter, which has got limited support at the moment, but I think it's just mostly useful as you can kind of put a backdrop to text that might be over an image. So often we want to maybe put something which is with a bit of opacity or something so you can read the text over the image. So you can do that in a kind of much easier way with this when it's fully supported.
There's a lot in there.
Yeah.
If you actually think about it, and in our discussions yesterday, I think the two most intriguing ones, or the most utilitarian,
yes,
just for everyday use, are the first two, object fit and aspect ratio, because with those two, you can kind of put whatever you want, wherever you want, and be satisfied that it'll look just how you want it in whatever screen size is being used. So they're the most useful. But it struck me how much of that work used to be done by, well, a graphic designer, let's say, that, you know, you'd go back to them and say, okay, I need an image, but it's got to have this text on it and it needs to have, you know, a mask on it and whatever it might be. Now, a lot of that can be handled by a developer with CSS. Yes. So it really does, well, not undermine, but it does shift the balance of what the graphic designer is going to do as opposed to what the developer is going to do. And now the developer is armed with all these tools to go to the client and say, yeah, I can just do that in CSS. Don't worry, we'll take care of it. It'll all be in the right way and we'll get a blur on it. That's no problem. We don't have to get another blurred version from Photoshop. Don't worry about it. And, you know, the way to change the shapes of them all. And I imagine you can come up with some really curious little shapes and overlap them and all of that kind of stuff. So it's brilliant. There's loads in there.
Yeah, you're right. I think the top two are the ones that solve a lot of the responsive issues we have to deal with. And the other ones are a bit of extra fluff on the top, aren't they? The cherry on the cakes if we want to do some special things. So I put on the notes here is maybe just worth mentioning. We were talking about it last time, which was that there is this experimental prefers reduced data media query. So we have that ability to get rid of those people who want less data, to only serve them the essential images and remove the non-essential ones. So I suppose it's related to this.
Can you give an example of that? Because when I was trying to imagine that in my head, I couldn't come up with something where that would fit. But have you?
Well, I think so. We'll talk about this, I think, later, because we've given this a subtitle of, you know, are the images still worth 1,000 words when it comes to the web? But I think, you know, there's a lot of times where we've deeply graphic now. We like to use lots and lots of images, and it's easy to get those images with AI and all the stock images so we can make our sites beautiful. But often they don't serve the user. And if that user is specifically or will be able to specifically request that they have less data because they pay for it, you know, we can honor that by really only giving them the images where it actually, they need that image to understand what's
going on.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you get rid of all of the surface stuff. I mean, obviously it's up to interpretation, but I think I could see that as a way forward. I mean, it's fairer on people globally who do have to pay a lot more proportionally for their data, you know,
okay.
on the mobile. So I think it's a good thing. And I also put a little note in here. It's just a reminder again, what I sort of alluded to before, I think, was the fact that this is still an add-on to the web, isn't it? It's still like an embed, like a video in a way.
Yeah.
Images are.
Yeah.
And we still have to, because it's an inline element, which if you put large image in, you get horizontal scrolling. We still, most of us have to put reset in our CSS before we start to make sure that it's displaying block and that it's got a, well, I use a max inline size of 100%. So it doesn't, we don't have
doesn't
it
ever
scrolling.
Enforce the scroll. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's when you do that and think about it, because it's often in a reset from the beginning or will be in a theme if you're using a CMS. But it kind of reminds me again is that, yeah, the web wasn't designed for images. You know?
No, it was, it very much wasn't. It really wasn't. Yeah. Okay. All right. Shall we move on to the CSS revisited, old CSS revisited?
Yeah, I think this is maybe a debate for another time, but I'll just mention it now. I just think I've recently having to think about images again, doing it more manually, is the fact that I get back to earlier debates where I thought I'd probably solved them, such as, you know, when does the image go as an image tag in your HTML? And then when is it a CSS background image? When is it? We have this distinction generally that if it's meaningful content, it goes in your HTML. If it's just decorative, it doesn't need to be read as HTML and it purely is for decorative. The stuff that you might lose if you were reducing data for somebody.
Right.
But I just think this, it's never quite that simple when you start to look at things, particularly like the logo, which is that, is it decorative?
Oh, you know,
or is it?
Yeah.
Is it actually a HTML? Should that logo be the image that you have in there that is indexed, or is it the top? Anyway, I think we'll leave that as a debate. We might need to dive into those appropriate uses of images another time, because we could go off on a tangent here. But yeah, there was just that. And I think also a new awareness for me revisiting CSS is alt tags. I mean, I don't know if it's the same for you, but often when I was aware that I should put alt tags in, there was a lot more influenced by people who were thinking about SEO and saying you need to put them in there to boost your SEO. Which of course is really against what it's there for. It's but to help
accessibility. Yeah,
exactly. And that's interesting, because I mean, you've talked to people a lot about this, so I think you're quite knowledgeable about this. But you know, there's often, I mean, I had to learn that it's okay to use a blank alt tag if it doesn't help the screen reader. Something I never really knew before. I thought, oh, I must fill them all, else I'm in trouble. But
yeah,
actually, yeah. No, you decide, don't you? And you really have to decide what you're explaining to people, you know.
Well, if the image is, oh, I don't know, just like a red dot, and it's some sort of background effect or something, does that deserve an alt tag? You know,
no, what? Probably not. It's interesting. I was putting an alt tag on something which was the toggle switch for light and dark mode, and you suddenly realize I just wrote out what I thought I needed, explaining what that toggle was. It was a sun icon or something. But actually, what the screen, you know, if I stopped for a moment and thought about it, what the screen reader needed to know is that this is a representation of a sun. What it does is allows you, well,
right,
to go. I needed to tell them what the thing was,
okay, got it,
and write it in proper text with a full stop at the end of it, you know, that kind of stuff, you know. So I think this is all, to me, it feels like this is all new stuff. We revisit a lot of the things on the images. That
I guess the legacy for you, and of, you know, the continuing use for me of WordPress, you know, a CMS, it made doing alt tags trivially easy, and you would have a bunch of fields next to the image, you know, a description, the alt tag, a caption, and various other things. Depending on what plugin you'd installed, you might get a bunch of other fields as well. And it was just too easy to come up with one and just copy and paste it into all the fields, not really thinking about what the purpose was. But you're right. If the image literally is, oh, I don't know, maybe it's just some sort of wave to define that this is one section and now we're moving into another section on the website. No screen reader needs to be interrupted by that. You don't need to be told, okay, here's an image of a wave showing that we're moving on to another part of the website. That's just fluff. You want to just skip over that, I guess.
Yeah, and that's it. So that it's, I'd definitely be rethinking that again. Mm. And it's images and what you need to read out about your images to people. Shall we skip on to new HTML? There's not much in that, but we do mm-hmm. have things for performance, which is load-in equals lazy or eager.
Yep.
Which is wonderful because you needed JavaScript if you wanted to delay the load-in of your images. Obviously, we don't want to do that when they're in the viewport in the beginning because, you know, we're delaying and we're creating load speeds, which are increased because you're waiting for that main image to come in. But that's very useful.
It's kind of interesting, that one as well, though, because there are certain situations where I would imagine the eager would be quite useful. Well, especially if you're thinking about Core Web Vitals and things like content layout shift. If you've got an image which, in some way might push content down because it's part of the header or something, and that image needs to be there from the get-go, maybe there is a situation where you would put that as eager, but everything else would be lazy because everything else is, you know, not going to cause a problem with content layout shift. I don't know.
I think eager's a tricky one. I mean, we can understand lazy, and anything that's not in the viewport, you put as lazy so it doesn't have to load. Eager, as I understand it, I think it's there for that situation where you may have multiple images that are in your viewport, and one of them's more important than the other, and you might make that eager because you want that one to load before the other ones load in there.
So a terrible example then would be some sort of slider where you want the, let's say that the slider is the first thing on the website. Oh, goodness, crikey, don't do this. but you'd want the first image to be eager, and then you want all the other images in the slider to be lazy because you want the first one to happen immediately so that you've got that context when you first get eyeballs on the page. But the rest want to be eager. I am not, by the way, advocating the use of sliders, but that's maybe an example where it might work.
No, and I think that's it. But then we have, coming a little bit later, is priority hints, fetch priority high and low, where we can also help with that initial load by saying, I want you to load these things first. I think, you know, because I got a bit confused with that one, really. I was thinking, well, eager, isn't that the same as, priority fetch high? But no, I think it's when you're lazy loading and eager loading is you're choosing between multiple images. And I think with the fetch priority, you're saying from the beginning in your document when they're reading it, which things do you want us to get first, you know?
But is it just a binary toggle? Is it just high or low? And if that's the case,
there's your two options.
Yeah. So let's say that, you had a gallery of images. Maybe you would have them all as lazy because they're below the fold. You know, they're not in the viewport, if you like, at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then you want the first row of that gallery to be fetch priority high so that happens first when that's scrolled into view, and then the other ones would be low. I'm struggling to see a scenario where you mix and match those two together.
Actually, well, partly I've created the problem because fetch priority isn't something that's just related to images where the load is.
Of course.
So you may want to load certain JavaScript.
Right. Got it. Yeah, of course.
So it's included, but I mean, you can, you know, basically fetch priority for any of your elements or files. So, yeah. And just quickly, we'll just go over some of the old HTML revisited. I mean, this is, I guess it's me talking out loud to somebody who's kind of let the CMS do it all for me and think about it. So one of the things that I think I forgot about kind of existed, which is the picture tag.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because the first project I did where I wasn't relying on the CMS and did it by hand, I used the art direction that comes with that. Basically, the idea that depending on the media queries you associate with the picture tag, you can alter the image. So, for example, what it does, it allows you to have multiple image sources and choose depending on maybe dark light preference or on the size of your device, which image it's going to serve. And that image can be an entirely different image.
Yeah,
so you could have a horizontal one and you can have a sort of vertical image if you want for depending on your different devices. So I put that to really good use because something that would have been a whole complex layout with lots of different images I put into one image and just showed the different version once you reach
there. Oh, I see. So on a, let's say, for example, on a desktop, you had a bunch of images and they made up some sort of, I don't know, masonry layout or something like that. And then you just got rid of that altogether and just put the one image, which was static and fixed. And, you know, I know exactly where everything is. Oh, that is clever.
It was a wonderful cheat when I didn't have much time on the project that I needed to do, where suddenly at the last moment we got in was this series of rooms, and one was a big room and it had a couple of other rooms. So there was a big image on desktop to the left and then two small images of the other rooms to the right. And then, of course, all I needed to do was create an image of it.
The three things together, right?
Yeah, down there, and just swap them over with this picture for sort of art direction. And it saved me, because that's a big job to do with CSS. Very lazy of me, but, you know, it just allows you to do kind of those quick jobs as well. So I like that.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's often forgotten that. And source set, well, of course, that's something, you know, which in a way was a joy with CMSs, that you can get them to crop up a whole bunch of images and serve them appropriate to the viewport size. And that's sort of wonderful until I really got into the speed stuff later and thought, well, it's always a compromise. It can't be perfect. It has to crop a certain set of numbers based on what it thinks that image is going to take up in your viewport. And it has to apply that to all images. You lose the control. So when you do think, oh, well, that's great, I can control it myself, you suddenly realize that cropping all these images and coding up all these different source sets, where you end up with another dilemma over, are you just doing it on the size of the images, but also are you doing it on the density of the resolution as well? Are you doing times two for retina screens as well? You know, you can really end up with a big page full of code when you start to get into this. So I do think this is why I feel we're always catching up. And then the latest thing is we've moved to container queries where, well, suddenly responsive images don't work for that. If we're setting our size based on the container and not the viewport, suddenly our responsive images have gone, if that's the route we go down. So it does feel to me like it's never been perfect, has it, responsive images?
No, and difficult to get right, I think. I mean, images just... What we're learning from this episode is that images are just really frustrating in every respect. You know, they're not easy. And maybe this will all help. Anyway, sorry, I interrupt. You're on figure, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just wanted to mention figure because this, again, is something that I've almost forgotten. You know, it's not something that I'd generally be using, but there are some kind of older school people, and they may be right. It's the same. Well, if this, you have a figure and you allow them to put a figure caption, and this is some way of explaining to everybody what this image is about, you know, shouldn't that be in all HTML images? If you say that they need to be explained and you want to explain them to everybody, shouldn't they all be in a figure? It's just a question, a random question to put out there. But I think it's just one of many. There was a great article by Stephanie Eccles, who was brave enough, because she's such a good technician on kind of new stuff, to list all of the things where we've never come to an agreement on HTML about how we do it. You know, if we read them in isolation, you should use this for that. And figure's one of those examples. But, you know, you question it enough and you go, well, shouldn't they all be in a figure? Or they're not important and they should be a background image?
Yeah, that is interesting. Okay, yeah. I confess I didn't get a chance to read Stephanie's article, so that's my that's my constant study for the weekend, David.
Oh, it's just a list of all these little things. I mean, it goes against what we're trying to do on this podcast, because we're celebrating the idea that CSS made it so much easier, and we're digging into all of the gripes and the niggles that have been sorted. But she comes up with a whole bunch of them, and only somebody of her standing, I think, could do that, who's such a strong technical writer, just to say, yeah, we still haven't decided. We still, you know, we're still not even sure when we should use a button and things like that, you know. So anyway, it is quite a good read. So that's it. Should we just quickly talk about the new formats? Because we can't mention images without talking about things like WebP and AVIF, can we?
I think these are really exciting. Just from a technological point of view, it fascinates me that you can compress the same image and get more or less the same quality out, but it's with a different algorithm, for want of a better word, that's crunching that image, and WebP, AVIF are the two that seem to be coming down the pipe. According to this, WebP is now at 98%, so no reason not to use it, except in my case, I have a reason not to use it, and that is that I use a third-party service to consume my RSS feed, which is a podcast. And then it turns that into a YouTube video, and that platform won't support WebP will only support PNG or JPEG. So I'm being stymied by a third-party solution, which I rely on to save me hours and hours of work each week. But that's no excuse, really, when the formats are saving so much time and, you know, time to load in the browser. They're better for the environment. They look exactly the same. And the support, 98% for WebP, you're saying, and AVIF 93%. So
yes.
I guess at the moment, you're going to plump for WebP.
Yeah, I am. And I mean, it was interesting because, again, when I had this choice and it, you know, started hand-building the stuff, I started to do some things with the images. Again, this is where confusing. So I thought, oh, AVIF would be smaller now. So if a browser supports that, I'll use the picture tag to support AVIF for those browsers who understand it. If not, there's a fallback to a JPEG. If not, there's WebP. And I've got three formats in the one image. And suddenly I think now, and this is experimental. I don't know if anybody else has got anything to say about this because I'd love, it may not work. But what I've decided now is I'll do is that I think WebP is pretty much good for all the images I want. So I'll do it with those because I'm pretty happy with the support that they've got. And what then I can do is if I want to move to AVIF because that's better and it works out reasonably the same, I can bulk shift them, can't I? And do a find and replace where it would have been such a job if I'd have to try and find and replace all this combination of, you know, AVIF, JPEG and WebP as well. So
it does feel like you may making work for yourself, aren't you, with all the fallbacks and everything. And at 98%, that 2% that's missing, I'm guessing that's some really curious browser that almost nobody, 2% are actually using. I guess at some point you've got to jump ship. Maybe it'll get to 100%, or maybe those browsers are, you know, things that are stuck in non-development mode that we can't do anything about, but the web has to move forward. And I've talked to a few people from Google and various other places, and they're very bullish about this. They're absolutely certain that, you know, WebP, AVIF, whatever it may be, is the future. So I think at some point, unless you're bound to a SaaS solution like I am to consume your RSS feed, the time to jump was months and months ago, not in the future.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's interesting because WebP is Google's format, but they've been very keen to promote AVIF, haven't they? And put funding into that. So the other thing on, and this doesn't belong on the new formats because it goes back to 1999, is the SVG. But I do think, you know, the version 2 of that is since 2018. And you know what? I mean, because of the difficulty of having to serve the quality to this range of devices and all of the tricks you have to go through, I've really come to a view that I'll only use an image if an image is really needed. And if I can use an SVG, I will, because it's part of the standard code. You can control it. You can animate it. You can do some really wonderful effects with its own filters that it has on it now. So I just think it's the most future proof, isn't it? It's kind of, it's always going to be there. It's only going to give you the quality. There's not something that's going to usurp it in terms of vector, I don't think, for that. And
I've heard of no development to try to supersede that SVG format. Maybe there is. Maybe there's somebody who's trying to decrease the amount of data that travels over the wire when you have to use an SVG. But it's sublime. It's amazingly cool.
Yeah, and it comes under the remit of the W3C. It's one of their languages, isn't it, to support. So I do kind of, I mean, I'm not very knowledgeable on this, and I need to increase that. There are lots of kind of cool stuff which we call.
But I guess SVG has its place. You know, if it's an image of a field full of flowers with sheep roaming around in it, that's not an SVG, really, is it? Imagine what that would look like, the actual SVG file, if you were to open it up. It'd be fairly insane. Whereas a WebP is going to be much more suitable. But so it's more like logos. It's more where there's, you know, lines within the image, things that it can follow. So letters and circles and shapes and bold colors and things like that. But
So if we could do it with a vector, then I'm very keen to do that, I think.
Yep. In fact, you've deployed that on our site, I think, haven't you?
I turned us into
it makes us look just very intriguing. shall we say. But nice. Yeah, really nice.
Well, it doesn't mean we can change the color at any point and the size is, you know, but yeah, it could be done better. But yeah, there was one thing on that. There was just last night, I got an email through which linked to something which I thought was fascinating, because we hear often, and there was a concern in WordPress about the difficulty of SVGs and how they might contain, you know,
malicious data, really. Yeah, exactly. It's a file format, isn't it? Yeah.
I heard something. There was a bug in WebP, which had gone unspotted for ages, where effectively you could hack a site by just putting one pixel of WebP. It's something that needed to be sorted out in all the kind of optimizers for WebP. But yes, it did allow people to hack through a WebP format.
I've heard nothing of that. That actually surprises me. But, you know, the hackers are ingenious.
There was just a bug in that. It's been fixed in most places, but there are optimizers where that won't have been fixed. And there was a little YouTube video. I wish I could remember it. I'll add the link in if I do remember to this.
Okay.
I think we put down here that we'll just ask that question again, really. I've phrased it as, is a bitmap picture worth 1,000 words? And you had an agency called Picture and Word, because these are the two key things.
Yeah.
You know, pictures. And I'm now getting to question how much we use pictures. Are we overusing them? Are we, because the browser processing time is costly. The amount of time it takes to make them work for all browsers is great. The environmental cost is high on pictures. I just wonder whether, and because everybody can get free and cheap images that look beautiful, are we getting to the point where they're not really serving us too well? They're becoming, you know, we want less images.
I guess it really depends on the kind of site. You know, if it's a news-based site, and you're trying to illustrate what's going on in a certain part of the world, then that image really, it drives that message home. You know, if there's some sort of public crisis somewhere and you're trying to encapsulate it in words, then it does work. And I think, if you are able to see, that is it's very powerful. You know, you can draw somebody into the content. But if it's just a blog post about something that you were doing, so this, for example, this page that we're looking at now, it doesn't deserve an image. There's just no scenario in which an image is worthy there, because all that you're doing is creating an image to evoke, well, in this case, what's an image? And you'd be scrabbling around to find an image. So I think you're right. I think there's definitely a place where they don't belong. But equally, I think given human proclivities to be engaged by things that we see, I think there are scenarios where it's worth using, but you've got to choose. Funnily enough, before we hit record, we were looking at a blog. It's not really a blog. It's a news site. Mm. And they had totally overused images. Like, they'd put this massive image on their news article to the point where the bit that you actually want to get to was way down. You had to scroll before any text came into the viewport. That's a complete ridiculous use of an image. They could have had that a tenth of the size and still got the same information visually across, but maybe that's just poor theme development. I don't know. So I think they have a place, but certainly not everywhere.
Yeah. And I think that's right. I mean, obviously photos are great. I struggle to get a good image of a client where probably the visitor, particularly a lot of the psychotherapists, the only thing that a visitor might want as an image from their site is the picture of the person who might help them with their problems. And, and I think in those cases, sometimes you struggle to get the one key image that you need, where as designers, we like to make things look pretty and we've got all these wonderful arrays of invoking images. But there is a sense where I feel over the time, that's become a mental overload. Like, we almost don't trust things if they're too beautiful.
I also have this intuition that stock photography sometimes is just jarringly unrelated to what you're looking at. So using a stock photograph, I don't know. You're talking about some sort of way of improving efficiency and you've got this stock photo of people leaning over a monitor, all sort of like scratching their chins, kind of, we're going to solve this problem with our computer. That kind of stuff, it doesn't lend anything, does it?
No.
And in that case, you'd be better off not having anything at all. It's better for the environment. It's better for your you know, speed, it'll improve your search rankings and so on. But yeah. But there's definitely, so photography that's related to the article feels like a good, nice sweet spot for when it's essential. You know, if your article is a news source and you've got a photograph of that thing, then yes. that seems like a good place to use it. But just stock photography that is tangentially related to what you're talking about, maybe not. Listen yeah. to me giving my opinions. Like
No, but I think you're right on that. I just thought it was an interesting thing. I mean, I was coming at it from the fact that I'm thinking, you know, less than needed images need to perhaps go for the load for the environment and for the fact that I think there's less trust. In fact, obviously, if I see something where I see there's a lot of AI-generated images going with it, my trust has gone down straight away on the site.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
You know,
we've already got dissatisfied enough with AI images. That,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
In some ways, in the same way that we would about cheesy stock images that we've seen, you know, with,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, with health professionals particularly. I mean, you know, that's if it's so stock, you just, the trust has gone for them to be genuine trustworthy people yeah. in the medical profession. So, yeah, no, I just think it's but I am questioning it now. And, you know, would you say there's no need for an image on that? But when we have used an image, it's quite interesting that it's pretty much been, even though I've used a WebP because it's somebody else's diagram, it's a diagram that should have been a vector, you know?
Yes.
So far
yes.
on yes. this side, there's been no reason to use an image yet as such where a vector would tell the story much better and SVG would work.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that, I think, wraps it up, does it? Are we done for episode 11?
I think we are. I think there's a lot of subtopics that come into this, which I'm sure we'll be back to images again. Such a big thing, isn't it, that we have to get right? It's so difficult that...
Yeah, certainly a big part of the web, but they're not going away, David, that's for sure.
No.
But lots and lots of food for thought there. Loads and loads of different things that are coming in CSS that you can use to make your websites interesting, different from the... from your rivals. NoScript.show/11 if you want to find the show notes and all of the links. I guess that's it.
It is?
All right.
I like that.
Yeah, we'll see you on episode 12. Take it easy.
Okay. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, lovely chatting to David Wormsley today. If you enjoyed that episode, please go to wpbuilds.com, search for episode number 377 and leave us a comment there. We would really appreciate that. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with The Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place. Invoice clients and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more by going to go.me/WPBuilds. Once more, go.me/WPBuilds. And we're also sponsored by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. That's bluehost.com/cloud. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro and Bluehost for their ongoing support of the WP Builds podcast. Okay, that's all I've got for you this week. Just a quick reminder, we'll be back for This Week in WordPress on Monday, 2 p.m. UK time, wpbuilds.com/live. And we'll be back next Thursday for an interview episode of this podcast. I appreciate you listening. I really, really do. Thank you so much for that. All that it remains for me to do now is fade in some awful cheesy music and say, stay safe. Have a good week. Bye for now. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news from the WordPress community. Now, welcome your hosts, David Wormsley and Nathan Wrigley.